This is Martha Nix Wade with An Exposed Secret. And that is the desire of our show, is that you will become stronger. You'll become stronger as a parent. You'll become stronger as an individual. And you'll be able to bring about change surrounding the issues of sexual abuse, whether it be protecting a child or experiencing the process of restoration yourself as a victim of sexual abuse. I've been down that path for now 20 years, working through my own personal sexual abuse. And the healing process is truly amazing. And I'm thankful that I'm on the path and being able to guide others down that path and just up to a greater life where we're victors, we're thriving, and we've taken those pieces of our life that could have destroyed us, and we're using them to build a strong future and to help protect other kids and help other victims of sexual abuse know they're not alone and there's a place to turn. I started the nonprofit A Quarter Blue many years ago as a place where people could turn and hear the truth surrounding sexual abuse, and I realized that I wanted a greater place to stand, and here we are at Skid Row Studios doing just that, enlightening people to how to address the issues surrounding sexual abuse. If you want to chime in today and share, or you have any questions, please call 800-893-9562. That's 800-893-9562. This week, for me, a tragic story came out. There was a 13-year-old boy, and they found out that a pedophile was living in his home. And when the police officers arrived, they found not only a registered sex offender, but they found feces smeared against all of the walls. And then, ultimately, the little boy went home. And when the news reporter was interviewing him, he said, "You know, it's not so bad once you get used to it." I thought, he has come to a point of wanting to think this is normal and this is okay. And he's gotten used to these horrific surroundings. And then he said about this man who's a registered sex offender, "Oh, I love him. He's a pretty cool guy." Well, you know what? Most of us who are victims of sexual abuse, we really did think we loved our perpetrators. And we thought they were cool because they poured time into us. And we wanted someone to pay attention to us. And here's this boy. He's back in this home where his mom has normalized this. And she said, "We're all about second chances. My dad was a sexual offender. And so we're have our home open because everybody deserves a second chance." And now she's endangering her own son. We need to wake up. We need to wake up and protect our kids. And if there is someone that we suspect is sexually abusing our child, we need to step up and be an advocate for them, listen to them, and get them the help they need. And that's why I've invited my guest today, Elizabeth Rivas. She is an amazing woman who has so much information to share with you. And I hope that you'll stay with us and just take this in, because you don't know if one day you are going to discover that one of the children whom you love has experienced sexual abuse, and you need to be there for them and truly walk the path with them. So Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, would you do me a favor and share with our listeners about your experience and what led you to this point where now, at least for us as an organization, A Quarter Blue, you are helping run our parent support group. You just started our support group for parents in Spanish this week, and what an amazing asset you are to our work. And what led you to this point?
Well, it goes many years back. I am a survivor of domestic violence abuse, and what happened to me was horrific, and I didn't want anybody else to go through what I went through. So I took it upon myself to become a certified domestic violence victim advocate. And that started me to the journey of helping others. And from there, I had always had the passion of working in law enforcement. And one thing led to another, and I was able to fulfill one of those dreams. And I worked for the Santa Ana Police Department in the jail as a corrections officer. That gave me a lot of exposure to a lot of different things that I had no idea. So seeing that from that perspective, the criminal side, the perpetrator side, was very eye-opening to start with. I ended up leaving there, and I followed my next dream, which was to work in the area of mental health. And I worked doing outreach and engagement. And just, again, with the exposure of being out in the community and meeting people with different needs. And I would run into a lot of people that had survived a lot of really horrible trauma. From there, I decided to go back to school. I got my bachelor's degree in psychology, and I am almost done with my master's in psychology to become a marriage family therapist and a licensed professional clinical counselor. With that, I had the extraordinary opportunity to work directly with sexual assault victims through community services program. I was stationed out of the district attorney's office and worked with the DA investigators, the district attorneys, law enforcement, and my AA, which is in criminal justice. Everything kind of tied in together. It fit perfectly. So I had the criminal justice background, plus I'm now getting my psychology background. So it was a perfect fit for me. Having that exposure just really opened my eyes to now not only the criminal part of it, but now the victim aspect of it. And again, it was very eye-opening to see how the real criminal justice system works and how it doesn't work.
And is that very difficult to walk alongside of victims when you're not seeing the system work for them?
It was extremely difficult because there is no guarantee. When there's a jury trial, you could have a lot of evidence, but a jury comes back with not guilty or a hung jury, and sometimes the perpetrator walks, and that leaves the victim with, again, the blame, the guilt, all of the painful memories that no one took responsibility for what happened to them.
And I've lived that. I've lived where I was in court. It was Victim Impact Statement Day, and that's the day where the victims who want to come and they read to the perpetrator and say how the abuse affected them so that that person can hear that. And we were waiting outdoors, and we were all letters in hand ready to go. And the district attorney ran out and she said, "You'll never believe what happened. The judge says he's not going to sentence today, because if he does, he's going to go away to prison." And the agreement was that he'd have a sex offender card and be on probation for 7 years. And we were looking forward to him experiencing jail time by coming back. But then the statute of limitations changed. And he went free. Because really, most people don't understand that sexual abuse is something that is so traumatic that quite often the victim's body is there, but they've escaped and dissociated where they might not remember all the details. And those details are waiting for another time when our brains are ready to take it in. And I didn't truly understand it until I was in my 20s.
That's very common. And a lot of times I would go to the jury trial with the victim and I would be her or his support person. And I saw a lot of different things, a lot of emotions, a lot of feelings. And I remember one of the victims went on the witness stand. She said what she had to say. And she walked out of the courtroom and it was like 500 pounds had just been taken off her shoulders. So to see the transformation of her finally getting her power back, to sit in that courtroom and to look at the perpetrator in the eyes, it was amazing. Regarding the victim impact statements, that was one of my jobs, is if the family, the victim, the mom or the dad didn't want to read it, I would read it on their behalf. And again, it was extremely powerful to have them have that opportunity to say what they have to say. Because throughout this whole time in a jury trial, the district attorney and the public defender is asking the questions, and they can only answer the questions that are being asked. But in a victim impact statement, they can say whatever they want. And again, that was a freedom, and it held so much power.
Because for the first time, for many, they're able to tell their stories and let that person know, whether he or she cares, how their acts upon them affected them. And I wish that I could have had that opportunity in court. I was very fortunate that the church where the abuse took place created that opportunity. So I was able to tell him face to face, probably 6 feet apart from one another, 8 feet, how it affected me. And I am forever grateful for that day and that opportunity, because even though he's still alive, he's free. He may never see the inside of a jail cell. I was able to speak my piece, and he can live with that burden or choose to dismiss it, whatever. But for me, I was able to release it, place it in his lap. It's his to bear, not mine. And it is an amazing experience. And it's amazing to be able to share our stories here on this podcast and let people know that we don't need to be gripped with silence about them. There is a place to turn and speak and share. And I've been very blessed having you on board with A Quarter Blue and sitting there with parents who have been longing in silence to be heard and so confused with what's happened to their child and feeling so desperate with nowhere to turn, but that you've been there.
I really feel that that is a missing piece of what's happening. What I found with doing these support groups is these parents need to know and understand they're not alone.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of times they do feel that's not something that you can just open up a conversation with your neighbor or someone at work. It's something very private, very personal, but still you need to release that. So when we had the opportunity of having these parents come together, it was so amazing. You could just see the relief from some of these parents where, oh my gosh, they understand what I'm going through. And that was a huge part of the support group and having it be so successful. And I look forward to continuing having the opportunity to offer this, because as a victim advocate, I had a caseload of 250 active files.
Do you understand that, listeners? She worked in this position for a year and had 250 active sexual abuse cases.
And that was just for North Orange County.
That's staggering to me.
And to me, so all these parents, my 250 cases, they had nowhere to go. They had nowhere to talk about it. Individual therapy is very different than a support group.
And both are needed.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
But bringing parents together, or if it's women of sexual abuse, teen boys, teen girls, men, you need a place to go so you don't feel alone. Because often you feel like your therapist is analyzing, and they're helping you. Absolutely, they're helping you. But they're not one of you necessarily.
Correct.
And when you sit toe to toe, shoulder to shoulder, there's a sense of relief that you're not suffering, because it's truly a suffering. You're not suffering alone. And we had dads and moms come together, and they're a new family. They're a community within themselves. All of them were again together Saturday in our therapeutic art workshop, and it's amazing to see the camaraderie they have that came out of something that could have been gripping and silencing it and having nowhere to turn, but they're able to express it. And I'm blessed to be able to see the process, as I know you are too, to see how they're growing.
I wanted to mention, and we talked about this earlier, the family aspect, the parents of the parents, the grandparents, the extended family. a lot of times they cut them off because they don't understand. They don't know how to deal with this. So the parents of the abused child, again, it's that isolation. They can't turn to their family because maybe it was a family member that abused their child.
And often it is.
Yes. 90% of the perpetrators, you either know them or they are a family member.
And most officers would laugh at that statistic and say, 90? What do you mean, 99.9? Because the stranger danger is such a minuscule part of sex crimes.
And that's also a good point about the support group. It's not only about offering a place for them to talk about what's going on, but it's also education.
Absolutely.
That's a huge part. And having us go out to the community, have presentations, and parents coming to learn and to educate themselves on what to look for if you suspect that your child is being abused. Or if there's someone, a soccer coach, that has some unusual attraction to your child, what do you do?
Right, because it's very difficult because you want your child to succeed in sports. And so you think maybe it's because of the talent of your child. And you're trying to dismiss those thoughts of, oh, maybe he's got some peculiar interest in him that's not healthy, not because of his athletic abilities. But most parents dismiss that.
Oh, yes.
They dismiss that gut-wrenching feeling inside because they think, oh, there's no way. I'm being overprotective.
And we're raised to trust certain people. We're raised to trust people in the church. We're raised to trust teachers, coaches. And so you want to believe that's someone that I can trust. But in reality, you can't trust anybody. And I'm not saying that you have to be paranoid about every single person that comes into your life. But when you have someone, a soccer coach, that doesn't have any kids, isn't married, but is always surrounding himself with children, you really, really want to look at that and have red flags pop up and just be cautious.
And if they're home, I know my perpetrator's home was so the perfect place to be as a child. It's exactly where I wanted to be. There were games and it was fun to be there. And I didn't have any kids, you know?
Right.
But they typically make their homes a haven for children. And that does need to be a red flag. And what does someone do once they suspect that there's something weird? Like in this case, you're saying this guy is wanting to spend too much time with my child. That, and maybe he went to McDonald's and took the team or something. And your kid comes back just uncomfortable. Maybe they're jumping as you get close to them. Or maybe you see that they're talking a lot more about sex. All the signs we talked about last week in our podcast, and you can download that at skidrowstudios.com, or you can go to our iTunes and download when Wayne Brazil came, who's a marriage family therapist, and shared about signs of sexual abuse. And what if I suspect that this has happened? What do I do as a parent?
Well, first and foremost, you need to start at an early age and have that line of open communication with your child. They need to be able to feel comfortable to come and talk to you. So establishing that relationship early on is crucial so that if something does happen, they feel that they can come and talk to you. And you can just come out and say it. You need to be open. It's not about, oh my gosh, I can't talk about this with my child. No, you have to talk about it with your child.
One of the primary things that people do is they make a child's private parts like cute, you know, your hoo-ha, you know, and we need to speak in the terms as doctors would. This is your vagina. This is your penis, and speak straight up. So there's that open line of communication. We're calling the parts what they are.
Right. And that alleviates the embarrassment. You know, I can say vagina. Okay. No big deal. It's not, you know, something that kids get all weird about because they're used to saying that word.
Right. It's not a secret. It's not something to be ashamed of.
Right.
These are our private parts that are to be protected.
Correct.
Your vagina, no one should touch them or photograph them. If a doctor needs to look at your vagina, I will be there and we'll make sure he or she is being appropriate. You will never be alone when someone's looking at your vagina. Same with, you know, penis. Talking about with boys, their natural nature of having a hard-on in the morning, an erection in the morning. It's normal. But if we're like embarrassed about it, we then make our child embarrassed about it. Then if anything happens, there's no way they're going to turn to us.
Right.
I mean, we were doing a focus group and this woman said, "You made me have the icky talk with my boys." And my heart sunk and I wanted so badly to be able to educate her, but it was a focus group, you know?
Right.
And I thought, how can you make sex icky for your boys? Their penis isn't icky. And she's made it icky. And because of her discomfort, unfortunately, those two boys, in my opinion, are endangered because there's no open communication. It's something, ew, you can't talk about. So why would they even turn to their mom if something happened?
And there comes a point where at the right age, you do have to talk about healthy sex. It's just a part of life. I mean, you don't want to put your children in a nutshell where they're going to feel uncomfortable when it gets to the point where they get married and have a spouse and they shouldn't have a negative connotation.
No, absolutely. Sex is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
And there are just appropriate ways and times and they need to know that. And but that is first and foremost, we do need to protect our kids and educate them. It's believed that 95% of sexual abuse is preventable through education. 95%.
That's huge.
So why aren't we educating?
Well, and I say this all the time, denial is a beautiful thing.
Until your child's a victim.
Exactly. You know, oh, that would never happen to my child. Oh, I watch my kid like a hawk. There's no way you can watch your child every minute of every single day. You're leaving them at school, you're leaving them at soccer practice or gymnastics or cheerleading.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I have seen parents who literally believe they're watching their child like a hawk. They are at all of those activities, but they don't walk their child into the bathroom. And there's another child that is in there that can victimize them, or another adult in there who can victimize them. We cannot watch our children 100% of the time. It's right. An impossibility.
And even, I mean, I recall a lot of cases that I had where there was no way that the parent could prevent what was going to happen. A mom went to the hospital for a doctor appointment. Her son walked into the bathroom and someone followed him in. How is she going to walk into a men's restroom with him? So, I mean, there's a lot of examples where you do your best, but there's no way that you can be there.
And really, it does our children a disservice if we completely shelter them.
Correct.
Because at some point, they will be leaving home, and then they might feel so neglected by not having exposure that they'll be unhealthy in how they approach sexual relations and go completely crazy, and then it endangers them in a different aspect.
That brings up a point I wanted to mention. A lot of my female victims, after they had this trauma, they questioned their sexuality, and a lot of them became lesbians, or they thought they were lesbians. Same with my male victims. They questioned, am I gay now? And that's huge.
I sat in a trial with, there were 9 guys. And the one guy is sitting with his wife. And he's in his 20s. And she turns to me and she says, they're calling my husband gay. Because his perpetrator was male.
Mm-hmm.
And the way in which the attorney posed it was, so you're saying all these attractive guys came to you and they all just happen to be gay. You know, and here she is, a newly married woman, just broken. And I said, but you know he's not. You know, and that's not, you know, saying anything about that, but he was a straight male. But the courtroom was trying to infer that because he had a male perpetrator, he was gay, and he wasn't. And that just, it broke her heart, and I just wished I could have taken that back. But those things are spoken of in trial.
Oh, yeah. There's some of the jury trials that I sat in, I could feel my blood boil because of the way the public defender was questioning the victim. And the things that they can get away with was astonishing. And then, again, the criminal justice system, I had a case where the grandfather sexually molested his granddaughter for 2 years, and he got a 4-year sentence, and it still boils my blood when I think about it. In sexual assault, in a jury trial, when someone is convicted, they only have to do 85% of the time. A lot of people think, oh, they're going to be there for the whole 4 years. No, it's 85% of the time. For lesser crimes, like if you were to steal a car or you did a burglary, you only have to do 50% of the time. So there's...
So why would I, if my child's a victim of sexual assault, what should motivate me to file a report? And how do I go about that? But can you answer both of those? What do I do when I suspect that my child has been exposed to sexual abuse? And then two, why would I want to go through with that, knowing that possibly, you know, the guy's going to only serve a portion of it. He might go free. It might be only 2 years. What would motivate a parent to follow through?
First and foremost is that you're showing your child that you'll do anything to protect them and stand up for them. You're the adult. You're the person that's going to be there to protect that child. And if your son or daughter sees that you're not doing anything about this, how are they going to trust you in the future? Not only that, but the average number of victims, and the statistics show that the average number is about 100 victims.
And there are some studies that show over 300.
Yeah.
It's so virtually impossible to know that your average pedophile has anywhere between 100 and 300 victims.
Right. So if you don't report it, how many more children are going to be abused? There's got to be a stop.
And who's going to be brave to stand up and be a voice for children? First and foremost, for your own child. But then to stand up so it doesn't repeat itself.
Right.
We know of, in my case, we know of 35 victims. That's who we know.
Mm-hmm.
And we know there are victims in other countries because of the places he went and stayed and lived. They don't have a voice. And we know of a woman who, actually we know of 10 children in the 1950s who were his victim, and the parent did stand up in his organization, did nothing.
Well, let's talk about the Boy Scouts.
Or the Catholic Church.
Or the Catholic Church. I mean, there's so many examples where no one wants to talk about it. You know, these are organizations that have been around forever. And to have that label on them now, they don't want that.
Right.
And they're going to do whatever they can to cover it, to not talk about it, and the denial.
Well, and they minimize what's happened. And well, like that grandfather's going to have maybe, what, 3 years in prison? It's a life sentence for us as victims of sexual abuse. We are constantly working through it and striving to not be bound by the trauma, but it's something we'll always work through because we might have a trigger that we didn't realize was there. And that shouldn't be fearful. It just is. And we need to increase the awareness around sexual abuse like we're doing right here. You need to get your friends on at Skid Row Studios to download this podcast and our other podcasts, or subscribe to iTunes and Expose Secrets so they're getting the information, because we have to build up our community to stand by these kids. So what else can you say to parents to encourage them to go through with this process? And what's it like for a child as the investigation's going on?
Well, there's a lot of factors that go into something like this. I mean, a lot of people have a misconception about the criminal justice system, and they think that once it's reported, it's going to be over and done with, and you move on. Well, a jury trial, an actual case, can last 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years before it even reaches a courtroom for a jury trial. And a lot of people don't know that. And they don't understand, why does it take so long? Well, there's 100 reasons why it could take so long. Sometimes trials, have you heard of a plea bargain? Yeah. You hear about all these cases, and it never reaches a jury trial because there's a deal that's made between the DA and the public defender or whoever's representing
the perpetrator.
And so the victim may never see a courtroom and testify. What I would say to parents is trust in the system. Even though it's not perfect, it's the only thing we have. So we have to trust and hope that it's going to work out in the best way possible for that family. And even though I had a lot of cases where it was a not guilty, it was a hung jury, and the perpetrator walked and is still out there. Unfortunately, it happens. But you know what? You took the steps to go forward and you tried to do something.
You did the best for your child that you could possibly do.
Absolutely.
And those of you who are parents who that has happened to, you have not failed your child. Unfortunately, the system failed you. But that's where you pick up and you don't focus all of your time and effort on the fact that the system failed you. You build up your child. You pour into him or her and love them and create fun family opportunities to step out and recreate the hope within your family. And you cannot beat yourself up when the system fails you.
I think another important point here, Martha, is that you may have experienced sexual abuse, but it doesn't identify you, who you are. That is not a label that's on your forehead. Yes, it did happen to you. It's something that you went through, but it doesn't identify who you are. And I think that's super important because a lot of people feel that they do have a label now. But you can choose to say, okay, I have to deal with this, process it, and move forward. You're never going to forget that it happened.
No, it is what it is.
No, but it doesn't have to identify who you are. You're still a beautiful, loving human being, and you have your whole life ahead of you to do whatever you want.
Right. And as you develop a love for yourself, I mean, that is so key. To understand that you're an amazing person and speak those words of affirmation to yourself. And as a parent, speak those words of affirmation to your child and let them know they are loved. No strings attached. You don't expect this and this in order to be loved. Love's a free gift. And that's the lie a lot of times that perpetrators put on a child. If you love me, you do this. But we need to instill in our children that they are loved no matter what. Even when they maybe fail and on a test or don't win a basketball game or whatever. That doesn't matter. That happens to everyone. Failure happens to everyone that's trying. I will love you no matter what. And as a child may go through the investigative system, that process, you let them know that you will be there.
And yes, I had several cases where the mother came to the DA's office to tell us, my daughter just made it up. She's lying. So you can just go ahead and drop the charges and let him out. And unfortunately, this happens more often than we would care to think. And these poor children, guess how they're feeling?
They feel alone.
Yes. Unloved, alone. Plus, they're dealing with what happened to them on top of that.
Right. And so now they're trying to dismiss it and take on their parents' lie that it didn't happen.
Correct.
But you've acted as an advocate in those cases to help those children tell their story, yes?
Yes.
Can you share what that's like?
Well, I think the few times that it did happen, the district attorney did an amazing job, and they separated the mom and the daughter, and we spoke to the child alone and basically told her, we believe you. We're not going to drop this because we know what you said was true. And this particular victim shook her head yes. And that's all we needed. And we weren't going to let the perpetrator go, oh, okay, she's lying. I'm not here to say that it doesn't happen. There are cases where they have made up things.
And I want to beg anyone out there that you never, ever do that. Because that gets in the way and endangers more children. It doesn't allow you to get even with that person. If you're that angry, this is what you're going to throw out there. You cannot do that. There are so many children who are being victimized, who are scared to tell their stories. And when they do, for people to question that it's happening, that it's being made up, what an injustice to them. We should never, ever make up a false accusation about sexual abuse. Please don't. And if your child ever shares with you that they're uncomfortable around something, someone, that something happened, and they start to tell you about it, don't shush them because you're uncomfortable. Allow them to speak and then call your local police department or call Child Protective Services and let the professionals do the investigation.
That is super important. I know that some families feel that they have to take it in their own hands. Oh, this is a family matter. But no, you're right. You need to go to the experts. You need to go to law enforcement and let them do their job. They're trained in this. They know what to do. They know what to say. Let them handle it. If something happened, the truth is going to come out. But it has to be done properly, or it can jeopardize the court case in the future.
And we don't want to do that. We want people who are violating children to be sentenced. And so if we have that suspicion, if our children open up, we need to call the professionals. And in our parenting, when we see a police officer, we need to interact with them so that we make uniformed officers safe. So if our child ever needs help, whether it be they're lost or they've experienced sexual abuse, that they know that law enforcement are a safe place to turn and share their stories. So anytime we see an officer, let's tell them hi. You know, let's tell them be safe today and let our kids know that we are encouraging them and lifting them up so that they know in case of emergency, they can turn to them and that child will be lifted up.
I do want to give kudos to the district attorney's office, because they have a program called GRIP, which is Gang Reduction Intervention Partnership. And they have law enforcement agencies that they collaborate with, and they assign police officers to certain schools. And it's, again, to bridge that gap of law enforcement and kids and adults, where you don't have to be afraid of the police. They're just like you and me, and I want to say hi to my husband, Eric.
Gosh, I wonder why that came up right there.
He's a Santa Ana police officer, and he's involved in the GRIP program for Santa Ana.
And that's Santa Ana, California.
Yes. And some of the things that he has shared is now that he drives up to the school, the kids will run to his police car and, hi, detective. And they give him a hug and they high-five him. And that is what we need to do. We need to change the culture that law enforcement is bad, or that they're negative, or they're mean, or, you know, they're doing bad things, because they're not. They're out there to help, to keep us safe. And when sexual abuse happens, these officers are the ones who are taking the reports, who are interviewing people, who are investigating. And the more information you're able to give to them, the better it is for the case moving forward.
Right. And if the act has happened and you know about it immediately, and there's a potential of having DNA, one, keep your child from going to the restroom, keep them from bathing. And they'll want to do that because they'll want to feel a purification. But you need to say, please hold it. We want to get a sample so we can get you the help and that person the help that they need. A child wants to help. And so when you can turn around the words and you say, we need to get help for that person. They need help. And so if you can just hold on and not go, as most of us say at that age, go potty right now. It helps. If there's any clothing, we want to put it in paper bags to preserve any evidence, because evidence always helps. And then we go again straight to the authorities, and they will take us to the appropriate hospital to have the appropriate kit done. And anything that we can do to bridge that gap, to give our kids comfort, let them know we're right there, and let them know that the authorities in place will help. We want to stand by our children in those circumstances and give them a safe haven even during this time.
Absolutely.
What were examples you saw where you truly saw a remarkable parent that stood by their child?
Oh, well, like I said, a lot of times the extended family would disown them. Why are you, you know, talking about this? Why are you going to the police? This is a family matter. And a lot of the family, the parents, they had to make a decision. I either have to stand up for my child or I have to stand up for my family. And they kind of have to pick a side. And I commend the parents who stood up for their child and did what they had to do to not only protect their own child, but to protect all of our children that could have potentially been victimized by that person.
Absolutely.
I have so many cases that I dealt with. I just, to have the courage, to have the bravery that all these parents and even the adult victims, I know of a 70-year-old woman that was raped and she never stopped. She pushed forward. She never gave up on the system and she had a good outcome. And it was just amazing to see her go and just battle and not give up. So I just want to commend all the parents and the victims and there were some extended family that did support what was going on. So I did see a lot of that where they came together and they stood their ground and they never gave up.
That's an amazing front for a child or an adult victim for that matter. Mm-hmm. That there are people who will stand up. And so while you may be listening and you may not have personally experienced sexual abuse, you may be called on in the future when a friend experiences it. And they need people around them who believe them and who won't leave them. I remember when I was speaking to a group of people and the leadership was all there. And one of the leaders said, we have to get this into our organizations. And the one guy says, well, I don't want to open up that can of worms. I don't know what to do. I said, if it comes out, you believe them and don't leave them.
Yes. As a victim advocate, when we had to respond to the hospital for a rape kit, and the forensic nurse was there, that's what our job was. If it was just to sit there and hold their hand, if it was just to sit there in silence, that's what we did. Because to be going, you just got violated and now a nurse is poking and prodding all over your body. It's like being violated all over again. And to have someone by your side to be there with you, it just makes such a huge difference. And I remember one of my victims, 3 years after the fact, the one thing she said was, "I remember when I was at the hospital and the victim advocate was there for me." And she still remembered that day and the impact that that victim advocate had on her life.
So that's a shout out to the victim advocates.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I met the most amazing women that did amazing things to help victims. And Shirley, if you're out there, you're the best. You're my hero. Because this job is not for everybody. It takes a certain kind of person to be able to work day in and day out with victims that have been through something very horrible.
What got you through during those times? I mean, you had 250 cases.
Well, it helps having a very supportive husband and a good support system. And you have to have good self-care. You can't take your work home with you. And I had to learn that when I was a domestic violence victim advocate, because when I first got into advocacy, I wanted to take everybody home with me and save them. And I quickly had to learn some of them didn't want help. They weren't ready. And there's nothing that I can say or do to make that change until they are ready.
You can choose to be, I mean, you may be victimized, but then you can choose to remain a victim.
Correct.
And that's what you're talking about. And
yes,
we want to encourage people to wake up and realize, even, and it's part of that self-care of realizing, care for yourself. Care enough to say, I'm no longer going to be a victim. I'm going to break out of this and I'm going to survive and then I'm going to thrive and I'm going to make a difference and not live back in that. But as a victim advocate, you saw that.
Yes. And I think you have to also understand what your role is. As a victim advocate, I was there to support them, to help them with resources, whatever it was that they needed that I had control over. I knew that every time we had a meet and greet with the family, we couldn't guarantee them we're going to get a guilty verdict. No. We may not. We don't have control over that part of the case. But I was there to answer their questions, to educate them on the criminal justice system, because a lot of people have no idea. And that in and of itself, the education on what happens from the time the police report is taken to years later when there's actually the sentencing. What goes on in between all that time? When you understand what happens, you're better prepared to deal with that.
Right. And you want to give those answers and hope that you have a victim advocate that's truly going to walk through that with you. And if you're a person who's struggling and saying, where do I turn? We talked about an opportunity to just dial 211. And can you share about 211?
211 is an amazing resource, and you always remember 411 is to get information. 211 is basically the same thing, but it directly gives you information on social services resources, such as if you know of a homeless family or a family that just got evicted, you can call 211. And they'll give you resources to find where you can get free food, free housing, free medical. If you're looking for a shelter, they can tell you this shelter has openings. You can call this number. If you need a dentist and you don't have insurance, they can give you low-cost resources for if it's dental, if that's what you need.
So they're a great resource to call in if you know a felt need and you need to approach that. And, you know, we at Accorder Blue, just let me briefly tell you various things that we have. You know, we have our parent support group now in English and Spanish. And we have a women's support group Mondays in Orange County. And we will be starting our Spanish groups in with women and men as people reach out and say, I need this group. So we'll have men's support, teen support. We have our art therapy, which is the first Saturday of every month. And our art exhibit is coming up in April, and it'll be traveling among at least three counties, Orange, LA, and Riverside. And if another door opens, we'll be there with our show in hand. So we're looking for artists, poets, singers, whoever wants to express, break through, break free. Because that's what we're about. We want you to break through the trauma and experience a new freedom. And many of us can express that through art, because as we were being traumatized, a lot of us escaped into our right brain. That was our safe place. We created play, or we dissociated, and we hovered in that right brain of creativity to survive. And so we go back into that right brain through art and start healing that part of the brain. And we have resources there. You can go online and look at them at aquarterblue.org. So that's aquarterblue.org. I want you to share, Elizabeth, about Casa de la Familia, which is where you work now in Santa Ana, California, and the opportunities for services there and what you're doing there.
Casa de la Familia is an amazing organization that helps specifically victims of crime. And there's a program through the state of California, the Victims Compensation Program, where victims, if they meet criteria, can get free counseling. A lot of times, whether it's the culture, it's the embarrassment, people don't report the crime, but they still need help. They still need counseling. So Casa de la Familia is now offering low-cost therapy to people who don't have insurance, don't have a police report, don't have anywhere to go. And we have a lot of different linguistics that we have: Mandarin, Chinese, Farsi, Sign Language, Spanish. So we're trying to...
Do you have English?
Yes.
Okay, just checking. It wasn't on the first list.
So we're trying to have as many languages available to meet.
Now, I think Vietnamese, yes?
Maybe in LA. Okay. We also have an office in Los Angeles.
And is it also named Casa de la Familia?
Yes, it is.
Okay, fabulous. So there's a place in Orange and LA County where if you have not, whether it be because of time or whatever it is that you haven't reached out and gotten the help that you need and you deserve, it's low cost. But the people, the hearts of the counselors who work there have amazing hearts to help. I've met a handful of them, and their desire to lift up people who are down and their ability to do so is truly amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about Dr. Nogales, who runs the center, and that's her passion, is to help victims?
Yes, Dr. Nogales is my mentor. She's the one who inspired me to go back to school, but she gives to the community how she can. The big thing right now is human trafficking victims, so we also provide services for human trafficking, but she'll do presentations, she'll educate the community, she'll do what she can, and that is her passion, to help victims.
Now, if you could tell, I'm going to give you three last words. If you could tell parents anything, what do you want to tell them?
Don't give up. Fight for your kids.
And any victim? Child?
Don't give up on yourself. You have your whole future ahead of you. And remember that you're loved very much.
And then an adult victim.
You can do things to make yourself feel better. Get the help that you need. It's out there.
And if you need help connecting and 211's unable to help you, please reach out to us at info@aquarterblue.org. This is Martha Nix Wade. Thank you, Elizabeth Rivas, for joining us. And I'm looking forward to you coming back next week, and we'll talk some about victims' rights and what the rights that they have as a victim. Thank you for tuning in at An Exposed Secret. Have a great night.